Wednesday night on the Fan pregame, we're inching closer to the NBA NHL Finals kicking off, and we've got a legend on the show, Hall of Famer, six-time Stanley Cup champ, former Oilers head coach, GM, VP, president, Kevin Lowe.
All the things. Not many six-time Stanley Cup champions nowadays, but we got one on the show today. John Morosi will jump on in a half hour with the Blue Jays flailing this week at the hands of the Orioles. Talk about what's gone wrong here and where we might end up by the end of the season.
Marner discourse. Just another day. We've got comments from his agent, Darren Ferris, and Brad Trey Living. We'll talk about that later in the show.
Yeah, we've been waiting for these. And the Leafs hired Lane Lambert, and we have a new take on the accountability piece based on that hiring. Plus, best bets a little later.
Okay, this is you. You found a fun stat, and I like numbers and coincidences.
Well, I don't know how fun it is for fans of the Dallas Mavericks and the Edmonton Oilers, but at this time in 2006, both Dallas and Edmonton were engaged in their respective championship series, and both ended up losing to Miami and Carolina, respectively. I know you love historical anecdotes. I think that was kind of why you were on the New York Rangers to win in their 30th anniversary since the last time they won the Stanley Cup. Maybe it was just because we were overlapping with Nick Kiprios every day.
That's true.
But do those things kind of change the way you view these moments? Because we could go through, you know, the 5-on-5 Florida, the power play Edmonton, and we've been doing that here for a long time now. But when you see things like that, do you just think, oh, it's written in the stars, Dallas and Edmonton, they're going to suffer a similar fate just a couple years later?
No, I think I view it the opposite. Can't happen again. You can't have both these teams in their championships lose again. So maybe I see that and I think time to vote for the dogs because they're both underdogs in their series. And I don't know, maybe this would be a good text line question for our listeners, 590-590. What's more likely for this same scenario to happen, which would be Dallas and Edmonton both losing, or the opposite, them both winning? Like, that's... It seems like the margin is really thin, maybe in this Edmonton Oilers Florida Panthers series, maybe not so much with the Dallas Mavericks and the Boston Celtics. But I see that and I think, well, I want to go against history. I want to see them both win. And yeah, the 30th anniversary Rangers thing did get me excited because like I said, we like round numbers
as
humans.
We like Nick.
And we like Nick Kiprios. We don't get to see him anymore because he leaves too early. So I like round numbers. It's like when everybody wanted Austin Matthews to score 70. Is there a real big difference between 69 and 70? No, but you wanted 70, right? So I think you see something like this with the same coincidence of both teams being in a championship and you think, I want to see it end differently.
Well, there are some parallels, right? Because Dallas is doing the best player thing with Luka Doncic, right? And I guess Kyrie Irving would be the sidekick, and Leon Draisaitl is quite the sidekick to Connor McDavid. So we've got two similar setups here with the teams that did lose in 2006. with the superstar players, the superstar talent, is that enough, though, for both of them to overcome what is probably the best team in both the NBA and the NHL? I mean, I was reading some articles earlier today from The Athletic, talked to GMs and head coaches around the league. They all think that the Florida Panthers are just the standard, the best team in the NHL. But at a certain point, does superstar status sort of trump all that? And I think we're going to ask the exact same question of the exact teams that lost in 2006 this year once again, when these series finally start, with one of them tomorrow night and, of course, the Stanley Cup final beginning this weekend.
What do you think is more likely for one of these teams to win, either Edmonton or Dallas, which would be both dogs technically winning
both
the
dogs.
Series,
yeah,
or for history to repeat itself? Like, will one of these teams break their 2006 curse, or are we going to see it again?
I think it's probably more likely that one of them wins.
And who's that one?
If I had to choose one, yeah, I would choose Edmonton.
Okay, so that's
because I think if we're doing the superstar thing once again,
yep, superstars prevail.
Connor McDavid's star shines a little brighter than Luka Doncic. Like, I'm not really sure if Luka Doncic is an all-time unbelievable top 10 player in NBA history. I think he's got a long way to go. Connor McDavid, I think if he walked away after lifting Lord Stanley and at the end of this month, like, we could say, like, that was the greatest hockey player that ever lived. Yeah. I think it wouldn't be that crazy of an argument just based on talent and what he brings to the table and the evolution of this game. He is that good with Luka. I think he's still got to prove it.
Yeah, I think I'm in the same boat. It's not that I'm doubting Luka. I think, if anything, the hesitancy for me is, like, will the Celtics actually do this thing? They have, I think, more pressure on them. I don't really know who's got the pressure in the Oilers-Panthers series. Like, does anybody have this immense weight of pressure? I think the Boston Celtics, out of those four teams, have the most pressure.
You think so?
Yeah
I can see that.
The Celtics have the most pressure out of all four championship teams at this point.
Yeah.
Definitely. So
I think Edmonton's close, though.
You think they're under a lot of pressure?
Yeah, because the clock is winding down on contracts, at least. Connor has to win one.
Well, Liam Jeff Merrick said this is his last chance ever. So,
and yeah, and there's the pressure also of like a market that truly, truly lives and dies on this, and also the Canadian aspect in the 30 years. And I know people, and that's hit the story or the headline cycle once again. But there is a lot on that, like all eyes on this. I mean, if you're outside of Boston, yeah, people care about the NBA Finals, of course. But it like Jason Tatum's legacy versus Connor McDavid's legacy in the grand scheme of things, I guess to scale, I don't think it's the same.
We should do a power ranking of legacy stakes, pressure stakes, because all four are about to kick off. Obviously, tomorrow night we got the NBA Finals beginning, and then Stanley Cup Final beginning on Saturday. But there's a lot of parallels, some superstars in both. Nonetheless, we're going to have Kevin Lowe join us in a few minutes here, but it's funny. We talk about all the things he's accomplished. Oilers head coach, GM, VP, president. He won 5 cups. He's in the Hall of Fame. Does either
team... 6 cups.
Five with Edmonton. Yep, 5 with Edmonton. This guy screams Oilers, right? This is part of the fabric of the Edmonton Oilers. How do you think these legends feel watching, and we'll ask him, but watching the Oilers get to this moment? Like, is there going to be a little bit of nervousness, I would think?
Yeah, I think we got like a little window into that when Wayne Gretzky was more of a part of the Edmonton Oilers, like, you know, hanging out with Daryl Cates and all that stuff. And now he's hanging out with Paul Bissonnette and Liam McHugh on the TNT panel more often than not. But you can kind of see that, you know, it does mean so much that the tradition is carried through, and how impossible it is to live up to what happened, you know, 30, 35 years ago. I do wonder, though, it's funny you said that, because it's like, do they have a group chat? Like, are they talking about the state of the Oilers all the time? Are they asking Wayne if you could do what Connor just did? Like, I want to know what they're talking about.
There'd be a lot of thumbs up emojis right between those guys. Yes, like my dad.
There probably would be.
Thumbs up.
The use of the thumbs up emoji would definitely be at a high rate. But yeah, I wonder what they're talking about. And I wonder, you know, because they have more intimate knowledge of what makes Connor and Leon tick and how close they were and have been and are at this current moment. It would be, and we're going to ask, but what it's like, you know, being an Oiler legend and waiting for it to happen again. I mean, a lot of markets have to wait on this, but the Oilers are a little different. They're a little bit tighter knit. There's a reason why legends come through and stay a while and always have a part of this team. I mean, Paul Coffey's running the defense now.
True.
It's like, it's a bit cyclical, which people can like kind of poo-poo every now and then, but to be an Oiler means something, and to see the Oilers win will mean something to those who have done it before, I imagine.
Well, we live in Toronto, so we obviously know about like Leafs legends, right? Leafs alumni that come back to Scotiabank Arena, but
You can't act like it's the same, though.
But that's it. You can't act like it's the same. And I've never had the privilege of going to an Oilers game in Edmonton to see what an Oilers legend would get in terms of an applause. We do see often, they do every game at Scotiabank Arena, they'll have a Leafs legend on her. But a lot of the ones that have won, you know, it's been a little while.
Yeah.
So they're not, you know, ripping around.
A little harder
night.
To get up the stairs.
A little
to
bit harder.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of living, breathing, energized Oilers legends that were a part of this journey that are either working in the media, working with the team. Like, I wonder if that's a more, that to me feels like a bit more of a tight-knit and like active community than a Leafs alumni.
I think it would be harder to separate from the history, right? Because they are actively there. It is celebrated as such. Like, there's recognition of everything that they've done right in front of them. I think it would be an impossible thing to escape, but I also think it would be a valuable thing to lean on. Like, how did Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl get to this point right now where they are so obsessed with winning? Like, most superstars, yeah, they have that gene. A lot of great players have that gene. A lot of not so great players have that gene, but they are uniquely focused, I think, unlike others that we can compare to. We can do the Leaf thing again, but we don't have to. With Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl is a little bit different. And I guess the question would be, Are they a product of their surroundings? Are they a product of the history?
Did
they
culture.
Look around and understand, yeah. like, this is what happens here, and this is what we have to do in order to be revered the same way those who have won 4, 5, 6 Stanley Cups are? I think having history shown in front of you all the time has to be something that, even if it's just kind of subconscious, works and drives you. And I think maybe we see that with Leon and Connor. Maybe they are just different, but maybe it is a major factor just being a product of that environment.
Okay, we're still waiting to track down Kevin Lowe, so we will put that on hold for a little bit until we can get the legend on the phone. But let's talk about tonight's Blue Jays game, because
the group chat's probably going.
They're probably on the group chat sending thumbs up emojis. I mean, it's Blue Jays in Baltimore once again. We're gonna have John Morosi on at 6:30 to help us tee this one up. But I mean, last night we called it when we were kind of teeing up this game.
We called it a money making opportunity, and it was.
It's a real hard watch. But
yeah.
maybe seeing this like smack you in the face with the Baltimore Orioles is going to change something, inspire something. I don't see that urgency, though. I don't know what can be done before the trade deadline. So if you're a Blue Jays fan, like, how are you consuming Blue Jays baseball right now? I mean, it was Looney Dogs last night, so that must have been fun.
Yeah.
But like tonight is a interesting one because it's Jose Berríos on the mound. Probably the most winnable of the games. And as crazy as this is, the Blue Jays are favorited because of Jose Berríos. He's your guy. But once he's out of the lineup, it falls apart, and their offense is already starting way, 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 way behind where the Baltimore Orioles are. So, yeah, like I want to be excited to watch Blue Jays baseball, but I think I might be more excited when I start seeing some of my Buffalo Bisons get an opportunity. I'm wearing my Buffalo Bisons jersey or sweater today. But yeah, it's a hard one tonight because there's some hope, but what's hope getting you?
It's just hard not to be jealous watching this head-to-head matchup, right? Because the Baltimore Orioles, they have something that, yeah, I guess you could picture, right? You could be like, wow, if we do what they did, maybe it'll look exactly the same. But they did it probably better than anyone's done it, which is do the really hard part extremely well and bear the fruit of that. Like, this team is rotating in players that, frankly, are low on the prospect depth chart. They're coming in hitting home runs in Rogers Center, and you're just starved as a Blue Jays fan for any semblance of offense. And it's easy to look at the Orioles and be like, maybe that's the path. Mm. But then again, it's not as simple as snapping your fingers and being the Orioles. And we'll ask Morosi a little bit about that later, where it's like, yeah, if the Blue Jays go scorched earth, is this a realistic outcome that in 5 years, 6, 7 years, that you could be looking at a similar situation where these Orioles with an abundance of talent would make all the pain worth it? And I don't know if I'm going to answer that question myself. I would say, like, it's more wishful thinking than not. So obviously the Blue Jays are in a tough spot, but watching that team come through and kind of feeling helpless, like, it just screams that something has to happen. Good, bad, like, not indifferent. Anything but indifferent. Something has to change because just allowing teams like Baltimore, who are clearly ahead of you, are more advanced, just have a field day in your stadium. If we're going to do that for the entire summer, it's going to be tough. And doing it for multiple years, if the Blue Jays are going to tear down, maybe that's going to be tough too. But at least you'd have a chosen path. And right now, the Blue Jays are just grasping something, like just waiting to be told which direction to go. And as long as we stay in that stasis, it's going to be hard to be really excited about watching the Blue Jays, especially when the Baltimore Orioles are coming through.
I think particularly interested in how John Schneider deals with all this, because last night, some of his post-game availability, he's showing a little bit more, I don't know, he's showing a bit more frustration.
Sure.
Which
honesty,
which, I mean,
less cliche.
Yeah. No more tipping of the hats. He almost said it. But, you know, saying you can't just swearing about, like, throwing balls down right in the middle of the strike zone. And you can't just do that because they're going to deliver on it. He just feels like at this point there's going to be no John Schneider shortly.
I genuinely feel bad for him watching.
Okay, so I'm wondering your, like, level of emotion towards John Schneider. He doesn't have the puzzle pieces to make something happen at this point, which is frustrating. But he's, like, between a rock and a hard place is what I mean. Like, what can John Schneider do there are things he can do, but at the same time, he's like a sitting duck, right?
Yeah, I mean, it feels like that, right? It feels like someone who has to, well, because he's an employee, toe the company line and be like, yeah, these are the decisions. These are why we're doing. These are the decisions, and these are the reasons why we're making those decisions, and we believe in the people that are working with us. Because if he was saying something that was opposite to that, well, then he'd be inviting himself to the first ticket out of town, right? Mm-hmm. And you know, that's obviously, people are not wired to get up and leave themselves, and it requires someone else to do that for him if they decide that he isn't not the guy that can turn this around, or even be the guy who helps them turn it around, whatever course and whatever direction that they take. But it's hard doing that over and over and over again. It's grueling, of course, the baseball season, but the media season for a manager that's going through this when there aren't actually answers and you are asked to provide answers every single day, like, that's almost an impossible place to be in. So I find myself, especially when it's bad, and it was bad last night, of course, on the heels of a disastrous loss to the Orioles, that I don't even want to watch him, because I don't even, like, I can't expect anything more than he's going to provide. And yeah, everyone got mad at the tip of the hat thing.
Yeah.
But again, what else can he say other than burning down or burning the bridge between him and the guys who put them in this spot? If you gave him the truth serum, you'd probably hear something that you'd actually want to hear.
Yeah.
But you can't use that truth serum, and you can't be that honest when things are this bleak.
Have you ever had to cover like a big time like fire sale for a team?
Not really. I think it would be fun though.
That's what I'm saying. At this point,
because wins
give me the trade deadline.
Wins and losses are less important, clearly. Yep. And you're talking about the individuals who are coming up. Like, yeah, I mean, the beat writers for the Blue Jays, they want to see Addison Barger. They want to write stories about Aurelius
Martinez. They're unfortunately
Martinez.
Writing the same story every day.
Yeah, because that's nothing difficult. Is actually changing. That's it's just right. Like the continuation of the wheels spinning and you trying to jam the square peg into the round hole. And as long as that is the goal every single night, the questions remain the same. Mm-hmm. The answers aren't provided because they're not available or not at least right for that moment. And the same thing is going to happen over and over again. Until someone puts their foot in the ground and chooses a direction, then nothing really resolves itself.
Poor Blair and Barker having to... They're taking calls, though. That's the fun thing. Yeah, when we were on the morning show, we had calls sometimes, and we like to hear the fans voice their frustrations. One thing that we're going to talk on a little bit later with John Morosi, and yeah, we're probably not going to get Kevin Lowe today. No problem. Find a way to get the legend on the line. See, he's just probably buying cases of beer for the boys at this point. Like, good old Connor McDavid.
Maybe.
But before we pivot, and we'll do some best bets, and then we'll talk to John. I think there's a couple really tricky situations with pieces. So, like, let's say we're all under the agreement now. Time to trade players.
X,
what
y,
do you
Z.
do with Justin Turner? Because I think it could be a tough look for your franchise to get rid of a legend that you just signed.
I'm surprised that's the first name that comes out of your mouth.
Well, no, George Springer is one of them, Vladdy, Bo. But we haven't talked about Justin Turner.
Okay.
Obviously, he's not the top of the list. But I just think this one's a very tricky one because he's very much, very, very, very much underperforming. And there's a need to put some younger players possibly in that role. But I think it signals a really tough look for your franchise if you sign a veteran, a champion, and then you discard of him right away. Like, I think it's an interesting perspective on how the Blue Jays are going to work around some of this. They have the same kind of thing with George, but, you know, George makes a lot of money and they have to figure that out. But the Justin Turner thing has been such a disappointment, and I was so excited about Justin Turner. In that first couple weeks, he looked like the best signing, and he's a veteran voice, XYZ, but he has done nothing since, and it's going to be a tricky one.
Yeah, I think it would be easier if he was maintaining a standard. But I do think he is less tricky than others in that you can just have the conversation with him. Like, what do you want? Do you want us to pursue something that will land you with a contender? Maybe take you home if you want to play?
I think they're lining up to...
And the reality might be, okay, we have these conversations, we'll look into it for you. But if everyone says, nah, we don't need a Justin Turner right now, I'll be like, okay, we'll happily let you hit fourth on a team that may or may not be in any semblance of a race. And will thank each other at the end of the day. With him, it would be nice to get something from him for him. But there are a lot, in my opinion, a lot more difficult conversations. Like, how do you have the conversation with George Springer?
Yeah, George Springer, number one.
And again, there's not going to be teams lining up, in my opinion.
I mean, he got a home run. He's red hot.
However, I think there's actually more likelihood of a deal, maybe not more, but I do think it's possible because you're attaching money, you're attaching prospects, whatever way you want to do it, and it might actually get somewhere. But this team has to wave the white flag first. You're not trading either of those guys if you haven't actively done that. And I just don't know what the first domino is. I don't know what the first conversation is. That's what would make this season, of course, far more interesting if we found out what that domino was. Can Bo and Vlad be approached this year? Is there something that makes sense? Can you pull off something that significant in season? Are they just going to be nibbling around the margins? Because if it's just nibbling around the margins, boy, that's heavy lifting in the offseason. And where's this team even going? Like, the first question hasn't even been asked yet. And once we know that, it'll be, well, then all these storylines kind of fall into place.
The insiders are starting to buzz with the Blue Jays, though. They might be that team, not in a good way. Good way if you want media coverage and you work in this industry, to be talking a bit around the trade deadline, because a team that a lot of people had huge, big, lofty expectations for, falling extremely short. And yes, it's only June 5th, but you run out of time to even make it feasible to get into a wild card berth. I think we might be having some hard conversations over the next couple weeks. But let's take a look at tonight. I mean, if you're going to go see a Orioles game over the last four, this would be a good one to go to because Jose Berríos is on the mound. He is the Blue Jays ace, and he's giving them a favorable line to win tonight's game. My best bet is the Orioles, though, plus 100.
Yeah.
I mean, look at... I love Berríos. I got him jersey when we went to the jersey launch. I think he actually had the best case argument to be a longer-serving Blue Jay, which is why I picked it. But even if he has a lights-out game, that Orioles team is stacked from top to bottom. Offensively, it's just come so easy, and it just takes them winning 2-1. At this point. So Orioles plus 100.
Yeah, I can't really argue with that pick, although history would dictate that, yeah, the Blue Jays might be in a decent spot. Berríos is 10-1 in 15 career starts against the Orioles. And again, this is a new version, however, of the Orioles, right? So how many of those games have come lately since the Orioles have come to age, as they clearly have in the last couple of years here? But there is one guy who is recently joined the Orioles in the last couple of years, Adley Rutschman, who is 12-19 in his career against Jose Berríos with 3 home runs, 2 doubles, 4 RBI. I think it could be an Adley Rutschman night, as it was, last night for Rutschman and other Orioles as well. So over total bases, 1.5 plus 130. Like, I think you could pick out a couple of these, whether it's Gunnar Henderson, Santander, Rutschman.
Had a great bet last night.
Which one was that? Oh, yeah, the Mountcastle 2 home runs.
Yeah, which
was
one was
good,
that?
Which I erased from the dock. It could have been on television. I could have had a victory lap.
That would have been pretty sweet.
But, yeah, like, some of these nights, tonight is not quite the night where you just go, hey, what Oriole can do some crazy thing against Blue Jay pitching? Because Berríos, of course, is their ace and is an able body. But Rutschman has had a lot of success, and I'll choose that one as the best bet, plus 130 for him to reach 2 total bases.
Over under 2.5 Blue Jays that make the All-Star game. Because they've already started doing their campaigning.
And so number 2.5?
2.5. So, but here's what the Blue Jays use as their, like, imagery.
Okay.
Jansen, Schneider, Varsho, Bo, Vlad, Turner, Springer, KK, and Isaiah Kiner-Falefa.
The one All-Star wasn't even named.
Berríos.
Jimmy Garcia, no.
Oh.
And Berríos is in there.
No, I know. But those are just, like, the graphics. You can probably submit whoever, but we'll have to put a line on, like, 2.5 maybe Blue Jays All-Star.
I would say under.
Ooh, it's a tough one. Okay, we'll take a quick break. On the other side, we're going to talk to John Morosi. If you want to catch Blue Jays Central, head of Orioles and Blue Jays, of course, you can just catch that on Sportsnet. We'll shift over on Sportsnet 590 and Sportsnet 360 ahead of tonight's game. As we said, it's Berríos on the mound. Best chance, really, for the Blue Jays to get one against these Orioles who have kind of, you know,
reclaim
become their
vibes.
Big brothers.
Reclaim some vibes.
Let's do that. We'll be right back.
Unrivaled insight, analysis, and opinions on all things Blue Jays. Blair and Barker. Be sure to subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
We're back on the Fan pregame. Sportsnet 360, Sportsnet 590, the Fan, ahead of Orioles and Blue Jays, which you can catch across the network starting at 7 o'clock with Jose Berríos on the mound. Let's get back into the state of the Toronto Blue Jays with our friend John Morosi. John, how's it going?
Hey, listen, Justin, how are you? Everything good?
You know, I don't know about good. we're doing well. The Blue Jays are not. I'm wearing my Buffalo Bisons shirt just to try to give a little bit of energy to this roster, because I think that's what we're in a state of, I guess, a little bit of frustration watching the Orioles come into town. They kind of embarrass the Blue Jays time and time again. Maybe it feels like a breaking point. Is that an accurate assessment?
I think it is, Ailish, in terms of being able to assess where the Jays are relative to the top teams in the division. I'm actually here in New York. I'll be seeing the Yankees in person tomorrow night, Yankees and Twins. And I do think there is a pretty big gap between the Yankees and Orioles and everybody else in this division. And you look at the Jays' record within the division and start to ask yourself, what is their path? Do we see a credible path for them to move beyond where the Orioles and Yankees are? And the Yankees and Orioles are both super teams. Now, that is certainly out of the Jays' control, but we see the Orioles. They're calling up prospects, and by the way, Norby isn't even their best, and he comes up and hits a home run yesterday, and the Orioles have a comfortable win. They're just operating, the Orioles and Yankees, on a different level than the Jays and just about everybody else in Major League Baseball, with the exception of the Phillies and Dodgers, maybe a couple other teams. They're elite, and at the moment, the Jays are not, and I just do not see that gap closing meaningfully in the near future.
So not being as good as the Orioles and Yankees, I mean, a lot of teams are in that boat, but I don't think every team has the same potential consequence as the Toronto Blue Jays here, because they meant to be just as good as those two teams, or at least in competition with those two teams. You know, when it's laid bare, realities, that is, and maybe they are, if Baltimore comes in here, wins every game. Not to say that, like, this is the pivot point, this is when decisions are made, but when does that start to happen for the Blue Jays? Like, when is it too late for them to get back in? When do decisions have to be made? When does the pivot happen for you, John, if things continue to trend the way they have been?
Yeah, it's a great question, Justin. I think it's a two-part decision for the Jays. There are two directions they can go here if they, in fact, reach that point. And I agree that certainly things are trending towards the acknowledgement that this is not going to be a year in which the Jays win the American League East, if we can just look at it that mm-hmm. directly. And so there's the what I would describe as express version of a sell, which means that you potentially trade Kikuchi or Jimmy Garcia, Justin Turner, and hope that his bat comes around by the time the trade deadline hits. That's those pieces, which I think is within the purview of the front office now to make that decision, if in fact the standings would suggest that they should. That they did that basically with Stroman years ago. It's the same kind of idea. But then there's the more foundational piece, which is the Guerrero and Bichette conversation, which I do think is separate. You could move Kikuchi and your pending free agents without necessarily signaling a massive down to the studs rebuild. Vlad and Bo are something different. Mm. And at this moment in time, based on what Ross Atkins has said publicly on numerous occasions, I don't see Ross Atkins trading Vlad and Bo at the 2024 trade deadline. I think the only way in which they are traded is if it's either the offseason or a fundamental reshaping of the front office before the deadline, which, as the days melt away, we're already now on June the 5th, the notion that someone new would come in, evaluate everything, and then trade a foundational player by July 30th, I would find that to be pretty unlikely.
Do we know what Vlad and Bo want? Like, how much does their desire to, you know, decide what their next phase of their career is going to be determine what the Blue Jays' next phase is going to be? Does it all hinge on just what their preferences are?
It does to an extent. I think it also depends on the competing forces and desires for the front office right now, both baseball and business side. I mean, we know what a great job the Jays have done with Rogers Center, what an amazing experience it is for the fans, but the fans also want to see stars and players they know on the field. And at the moment, they at least still have Bo and Vlad. And I know, obviously, eventually winning will sell itself. And Jays fans are well aware that if they're starting to sink deeper and deeper in the standings and there's not as much hope for 2024, there's got to be something that brings you in and draws you into the ballpark. So I think there's a very real business component to things. I think as you look at what it would take to sign Vlad and Bo, I do think they might be somewhat different conversations. With Vlad, they couldn't even come to an agreement on a one-year salary, mm-hmm. let alone a multi-year salary. This goes back to salary arbitration this past offseason. So the notion that Vlad having a so-so year, I think that there's been hot and cold stretches, certainly better of late than it was at the beginning, that the notion that they'd be able to all of a sudden come together and figure out what a great long-term deal would be, I find it difficult to believe that, to be honest. And I also think you look at the big picture here at first base for the Jays. Vlad, if you look at since the start of last season, has basically given them league average production. And league average production does not get you $300 million. League average production gets you a deal like what Anthony Rizzo has signed with the Yankees in terms of on a per-year basis and probably not that many years. Now, obviously, Vlad is younger than Anthony, but the point remains you pay that money for truly special production. And if you look at wins above replacement, not that it's everything, but it is helpful, mm-hmm. wins above replacement tells you that Vlad has been around the middle of the league as a total offensive and defensive player at first base since the start of last season. And that player would tend to not get a massive contract. Bo might be a little bit different because, of course, they were able to have a multi-year deal before. Bo's agent is the same agent as Justin Turner, so there was a free agent deal that came together with the same agent and Greg Genske, so maybe that's a little bit of a sign of hope. But there's to me right now, Justin and Ailish, a pretty big gap between where their value has been and where it is right now. And that tends to not point in the direction of actually getting a deal done long term.
One thing that I find interesting about like this big decision making period that's around the corner is Ross Atkins is possibly the guy that's going to be making all these decisions. And I don't know if that's the way that Blue Jays want to put their faith in right now, because this offseason showed a little bit of failure in a sense of being able to address some of the areas that the Blue Jays needed to get better. And so is he the right guy at the trade deadline to be making more decisions for the Blue Jays, more about their future, long-term deals, selling off young talent? Like, how do you view the heat around Ross Atkins and the tricky situation of a trade deadline with that guy in charge when maybe that isn't the person in charge at the end of the season, if you know what I mean?
No, it's an excellent point, Ailish. And that for that reason, the Jays are kind of stuck, unfortunately. They are stuck. That is the word that I would probably use among all the different words that have been ascribed to the Jays in the last couple months. That's the one that I think is probably most appropriate, because you need to make changes. And yet, to your point, it's not as though the current GM has an extraordinarily long runway in which to make those changes based on the way things have gone. And so it's a quandary for this team. There's no question about it, which is why I really believe strongly that if Vlad and Bo are going to be traded, that Ross Atkins is not the person to make those trades. Because if you're not convinced that he's going to be around in this role for years and years to come, why would you entrust him with a decision or two decisions that will reshape the future of this team? It seems to me to be it's a very complicated moment, but that's a very logical way of looking at it. If he's your person, then let him make the decisions. But if he's not, either the decisions are not going to happen, or he's not the right person to make that call. I mean, I think that's where they are at right now. And I do think that they will be able to do some work and bring in players by trading the likes of Kikuchi, Garcia, Romano, some others. But this is not a team. And by the way, Jansen, have to think about him. He's in the final year of his deal too. The payroll is sort of out of balance. They're not getting a ton for the money they're spending on Springer. This has the look. You talk about like someone's retirement account, and sometimes you got to rebalance it. They got to rebalance. But I'm not so sure that necessarily the people who are making the decisions right now are those who are going to be around for whenever that retirement account needs to bear fruit years down the line.
Okay, you said people plural there because there is someone who has experience making big deals in the organization of Mark Shapiro. I mean, is there any chance if Ross Atkins is deemed to be not trusted to make these moves that he is, for lack of a better word, benched and Mark Shapiro starts making phone calls and swinging deals? Because there's a big difference, at least in my opinion, with 1.5 seasons of Bo, 1.5 seasons of Vlad, as opposed to just one full season. Once these guys get to the point where 1 year away from free agency, they're not going to explore the market. Like, I just feel like, yeah, there should maybe be some urgency here, and there is experience beyond Ross Atkins in this organization.
Correct. I think it's a very good point, and I would answer it in with two key points here. Number one, you're spot on about saying what they could actually get back for 1 year of Vlad or Bo. Take Vlad's numbers and Bo's numbers right now. Compare them to what Teoscar put up in his last year with the Jays, and realize the Jays at that moment in time had 1 year of Teoscar to trade, and they traded him. And for that, they got back Eric Swanson and Adam Macko. And Macko may one day be a major league pitcher, but he's not exactly a can't-miss, locked-in, top-10 prospect in the industry, sure. Okay? And Swanson has been a reliever who's had some ups and downs. That's what they got for 1 year of Teoscar. The time, if you're going to maximize your value, is probably now at the deadline, because when you consider the overall market for bats, there's not a ton of teams that have a ton of offense to trade. Pete Alonso, you could argue, J.D. Martinez, the Mets have some pieces to move. I think Bo and Vlad both have more value than I would say Pete Alonso would at this moment in time, and also certainly J.D. Martinez as well. So there is a need among a number of teams, Seattle most prominent, for bats. And Seattle's got an abundance of pitching. It's a natural fit. We just mentioned the Teoscar trade. That was a trade partner there. So there is at least some history of them finding a way to come together. If they stay internal, if they say, for the sake of argument, let's say in the next 10 days, the Jays go 2-8 and it's just apparent that they have to sell, then maybe the conversation happens at the ownership level. Listen, who is the best person in this organization to make these decisions? I don't think, given the amount of time that Mark Shapiro has spent on the more facilities side of things, the spring training facility, magnificent. First in class, maybe the best in the whole sport. Rogers Center, state of the art yet again, brilliant facility. That's been where Mark has allocated a lot of his executive time in recent years. I think if you feel like you have to sell, and if you're not convinced that Ross is the person to do it, then you're much more likely, in my estimation, going to put in a call to have James Click do that as opposed to have Mark Shapiro do that. Mm-hmm. Because James Click built a World Series champion less than 2 years ago. So he's very plugged into that level of the decision-making around the sport. So I think if they decide that they've got to sell, but that Ross is not the right person to do it, you're almost... you would probably say, I may have to hire somebody from the outside who's built a World Series winning team before, or promote someone who's already here. And I think that is where James Click is. James is a very good executive. He made a lot of great moves in Houston. And I also think to the larger point where there's been some heat on John Schneider, typically as a GM, you don't often get three managers to fire without yourself being on the hot seat. Okay. John Gibbons, Charlie Montoyo, and now John Schneider. I think there may be a reason why. And I think John, by the way, has done a pretty good, steady job of steering the ship with the pieces that he's got right now. There's just the roster, and I've said this before, and I'll say it again. The roster is not as usable and versatile as it should be. There's a lot of redundancy and a lot of multiplayer moves, for example, where if you hit Vogelbach, you got to run for him. Well, the roster is not... it's not effective at this moment in time. So for that reason, I don't think it's necessarily fair to judge John Schneider in his use of a roster that, in my opinion, is not as nimble as it should be.
We're chatting with John Morosi, MLB Network, MLB.com. What do you do with the aging and underperforming and expensive George Springer?
I would probably answer with the shrug emoji, Ailish, at this moment in time. Which is probably what all of our friends, if you text them, would probably do the same thing. I mean, he's clearly on the team. He's signed for more years than this. And again, that's why you start to wonder, there's got to be a better way to make this roster work. If George is going to be there, and I think he probably has to be, just based on his contract and other elements, you can't really move him off of the roster at the moment. And so is he then your DH? And what does that then mean for Vogelbach? And how you then, I mean, obviously he's basically the DH, and you've kind of committed to him in some role. I don't have there's not a good answer, because then you've got Turner and Springer and Vogelbach all on the team at the same time. So then how do you make it all work? And that's the point that I'm making about redundancy. There may need to be some moves made to just get a little bit more athletic and a little more usable with the personnel they've got. And if you can't move George's contract, and you really can't, you got to have him play somewhere. And it becomes a very difficult spot where you're giving away a lot of at-bats from spots, whether it's a corner outfield spot or a DH spot. Those need to be productive for you. And they haven't been. And I think that is one of the many reasons why this Jays lineup just doesn't seem to be passing muster in a very competitive division.
Based on a previous answer, you're kind of pointing to maybe the returns on a bow of Vlad, maybe not as bountiful as maybe we'd expect, just because of the brand name and you know, what their status is across baseball. If there is a most valuable asset, not someone that necessarily has to go, but if did go, would bring back something that would spur on some potential change, maybe not in short order, but sooner than later, like, what is the asset you look at? Because there are tons of assets. This team thought it was going to be competing for a World Series. A lot of good baseball players on this team, despite their lack of performance on the field. Like, who can bring back something meaningful? Who are teams going to be lining up to try to get out of the hands of maybe James Click? Like, what? When you look at this Blue Jays team, like, what is valuable?
I still think their pitching is valuable. And there's obviously, and this is the big, tough conversation, and I'll be clear here. I don't have any evidence to suggest that they would do this, but if you're really going to do a rebuild, do the rebuild. And that would mean that you would listen on Berríos. Again, I don't think that they will do that.
John, no.
I don't think that they will do that.
I just got his City Connect jersey, John. I thought he was safe.
And it's a great jersey. It's a great jersey, Ailish. So your Berríos jersey.
It's okay.
I plan to continue rolling my R's on this show for a long time to come. So we're good. We're good. So I'll stress and say I don't think they will go down that road. But if you get to the point where you're considering the full rebuild, I do think that you have to at least be open minded to just about everything on this team. It's, at this point, if you're at the bottom of the division with one of the oldest rosters in the American League, looking up at a couple teams, especially in Baltimore, that's going to be good for a long time, you're out of great choices. There are not a lot of great choices in front of you. And the difficult part for Jays fans to reckon with, and probably even people internally, is did our window close and we didn't even realize it? Like, we thought this was the opening of the window. Was our best team actually the one in 21? And I think that is both painful and possibly true for Jays fans to really sit back and think about. So I don't see Berríos going anywhere. But I think the pitching is what has value. Kikuchi to me would be a clear guy to listen on if you're not in it, and you can get back value. To me, this, I don't want to speak for Jays fans here, but I would think that there are probably a lot of paying customers, a lot of very devoted Jays fans who have stuck with this team for a long time, who at the moment, and you guys can correct me if I'm wrong, would probably say, this team is a little bit lethargic. Mm-hmm. I'm ready for something new.
Yeah.
And to where I would say that your average Jays fan who cares about this team deeply is probably more willing to see a dramatic trade or two than the front office believes they are. Because we've seen this team struggle a lot, and we've seen them just not be good enough. And I think the appetite and willingness for Jays fans to see something new. And again, I would trust your expertise on this one. I think they're more ready for trades than the Jays themselves might realize.
We're ready.
Yeah. I think if we're talking late August, September atmosphere, there'll be more excitement for Bisons, maybe the future, some glimpse into the future than a team that is, as you put it, lethargic. We got about 60 seconds for the next one. I was going to ask you about the Orioles, but since you're in New York, are you in New York this weekend, by the way? Dodgers sticking around?
I wish. I'll be I'm actually, we've got the Twins and Yankees on the network. Then I'm heading home Friday. I gotta watch my kids' theater performance on Saturday, Justin.
That's fair.
Priority. I will be watching carefully. I'll be watching carefully the Yankees and Dodgers, the possible World Series preview. I know a lot of people have been sort of putting that out there. I'll say this though, Justin. I would still say the chances are better than 50-50. That this is not the World Series preview, because I think the Phillies could spoil it, the Orioles could spoil it, and I'm telling you, the Mariners, if they get the right bat, and I'm not just saying if they could get Vlad or Bob, but if they get Pete Alonso, if they get Randy Arozarena, because their pitching is so good in Seattle that they are as confident as the Orioles and Yankees are right now, the Seattle Mariners are a nightmare team to deal with in October because of their pitching. So I'm going to say this is not a World Series preview, but I'm going to be watching anyway.
Okay. We didn't even get time to ask you about the Memorial Cup and the Saginaw, but, you know.
How about the Saginaw Spirit?
There you go. How about them, eh?
Josh Bloom, the pride of Oakville, Ontario, scoring the game winner. Congratulations to Josh. How about that?
That's good. I needed one little tidbit from John Morosi on hockey. John, wait, Oilers or Panthers?
Panthers. Panthers in seven.
Oh. Okay.
Sorry. I think they're the deeper team.
Yeah. John knows puck.
But seven is good. They'll win on home ice, right? So I like seeing that. So, okay, we'll accept that. Thanks, John. Enjoy your weekend, so and we'll chat soon. Thanks so much.
I appreciate it. Thanks so much. Thank you.
John Morosi, MLB Insider for MLB Network and MLB.com. That's going to be a big weekend in New York.
Yeah, two things. I hope to see a World Series preview because I'm going to hopefully go to a game at Yankee Stadium this weekend. But the more important thing.
Sick.
We should unpack this more tomorrow because we got a couple things to get to. But Vlad and Bo being like meh in terms of value league wide, and yet these two guys basically are holding decision making hostage in a lot of ways, right? Not that it's like, oh, they're, you know, there's an offer out there that they're, you know, toying with taking, but it's just the fact that you have to make a decision on these guys, and they're not even worth their weight. In whatever.
There are no Juan Soto at this point.
Exactly. Like, this is a really tough place to be. Like, if you could just, okay, let's move on and let's bring in a haul for both these guys, that'd be great. You can't even do that right now. And yet, they're holding up decision-making process, or at least it seems.
Yeah. They're stuck.
I think John said, right?
John's wording of the Blue Jays being stuck, having a GM that a lot of people have lost a lot of faith in, making decisions that are going to really change the face of this franchise in the next month or two. It's a tough thing to get fired up about, you know?
But yeah, but again, if they make some changes, I think people will appreciate and get behind it.
I'm on team change.
The lethargic, lethargy will bring upon apathy, right? Mm. If there's nothing that's done and you waste away potential value, albeit maybe minimal, like what are you doing? Where are you going? What's the plan? There has to be a plan. People will get behind a plan. No plan, easy to turn the other cheek.
When he said Berríos, my heart stopped. Come on, my guy.
Yeah.
He would bring in a haul.
Berríos seems like the one guy who's safe to me.
That's why I got his City Connect jerseys. I thought this guy was going to be a Blue Jay for the next X-Gun. Then he mentioned Kikuchi, but you were quiet on that.
No, I mean,
how much you getting the Buck Martinez shout-out last night?
I did get a Buck Martinez shout-out.
You want to say?
Not by name.
Well, close enough.
But we were talking about Japan, and he mentioned our conversation about Japan yesterday on the broadcast.
He ran into a friend.
He called me a friend.
Maybe because he forgot your name.
Not a foe, not a stranger, not a simp, as you said it.
Well,
although I am a bit of a Buck simp. Love Buck.
That Buck remembered your convo when you got a Kikuchi jersey. Okay.
Quickly, Leafs hire Lane Lambert. Your thoughts?
I think they have the scariest, meanest bench in the league.
Yeah. Between Berube, Lane Lambert, Guy Boucher, who we're still trying to figure
he'll
out if he's
going
to. Like, that is, they're Bond villains, basically.
It's scary.
And if we're talking about accountability, like, maybe it's just by the looks of their coaching staff. Terrifying individuals staring into your soul and demanding better results.
The
and
refs
performance
are
that meets the standard every night.
If you're a ref, you don't want to skate over to Leafs bench to argue with anyone. You'll say, we'll recall it. No problem. Yeah. It wasn't offside.
How about a review, Craig?
Here's a free goal. I'm not getting in the grill of any of those guys. They're scary. All right, Blue Jays, Orioles up next across the network. Sportsnet, Sportsnet 1, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. We got Jose Berríos on the mound. Berríos, as John Morosi would say. Have a great night, everyone.
Well done.